Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 43. I'm Jamie.
I am Tim.
I'm Alex.
And I almost forgot. Shit, what the fuck is it? So we are going to talk some movies today. Just a quick reminder, we are doing Green Room at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. But we're going to start with Alex.
Yes. So I finally saw Nocturnal Animals, 2 showtimes left in L.A., and I made myself go, and it was awesome. I could not believe it. It is my new number 3. Hell or High Water got bumped down a little bit to number 4. But, man, I was like, this is the best breakup movie ever. Like, it's like the ultimate, like, kind of like, fuck you to everyone. I mean, she really fucked him over. But, like, I saw it with a couple friends, my friend and his girlfriend. And we came out and we were talking about, obviously, it's about a writer who sends his novel to his ex-wife to read because she used to read all of his work. The novel is about the pain that she caused him. It's metaphorical. You know, she... This is a spoiler.
Hold on. Oh, yeah. All these films are getting spoiled right now.
Yeah. It's been out for a while. So, basically, she got an abortion and she cheated on him. And so, he was feeling all this pain. And so, in the story, like, his daughter and his wife get killed by this guy. And he's trying to get revenge on him, and it's like that's what it felt like to him, for her to abort his baby and cheat on him and divorce him. It was so good how they did that correlation. And one of the people I saw it with didn't know that, like, that part was fake, so she was super confused. But yeah, it was so good. Michael Shannon was awesome. Aaron Taylor Johnson was unbelievable. I was like, I think that was one of the best performances of the year for him.
And I
was
really liked it.
That was like, I'm so shocked he didn't get nominated for an Oscar.
Which we'll get to next episode.
Yeah.
But didn't like his performance that much, right?
No, I didn't. It's not that I didn't like it. I just, it was like a really good performance. I was just kind of like equating it. I think I was telling Alex one day that it felt almost like maybe Gyllenhaal's like Nightcrawler. Like it's, not Nightcrawler, but it's like Gyllenhaal in the earlier stages. Like Aaron Taylor Johnson is going places and he's getting better and better. And I just think that it was a really good performance. I liked almost everybody else in it more. It's not a competition, but you know what I mean? I can't explain it. It was a really well done performance. I don't know what I...
Yeah.
I have nothing against it.
I thought I liked him better than Michael Shannon.
Yeah, I did too.
I love Michael
Shannon, but I was like, man, like this guy, it was reminiscent. This is a big jump, but it was almost like reminiscent of Javier Bardem in No Country. And even, like, a little bit of, like, the craziness of, like, Heath Ledger. Like, it was,
I was
like,
gonna
almost
say Heath
like
Ledger,
yeah,
for sure, yeah.
It was, like, you know, he had that scene in the car when he's got his nails on the top and he's just, like, going nuts. And I was like, this is insane.
Yeah. I, like, for a second, I knew that he was in it because I saw the trailers, but then I was like, this doesn't look or seem at all like Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him, and he said that Tom Ford told him, grow out your hair, grow out your nails, and then just let me come in and just do what I want to you. And so he gave him like the mutton chops and you know, all that stuff, just like on the spot. But yeah, I know that last time you guys were starting to say something about, I think it was the intro, right? You guys were debating about the intro.
Just mentioned the intro. It was like super jarring.
Yeah
So you open with a whole bunch of happy, smiling, overweight, what Nora, the Hollywood would definitely not deem attractive in any way, dancing naked over like classical music,
Something like that. It's like one woman and she's just dancing and she's super happy, and I think there's like flower petals falling on her and things. I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, is this gonna be like really weird, like this, like Nicholas Winding Refn, or like, is it gonna be that weird? And the movie wasn't as weird as that, but I was like, what was correlation? And I mean, I know I said we were talking and I sent you guys an article. I think it was that it was showing the opposite of Amy Adams' character. The woman was so happy and vulnerable and just no care. And Amy Adams was so sad the whole movie and just not anything like her. I mean, what did you think, Tim?
About the opening scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a good insight on it. But for me, it was more like it really just set the tone from the first image where it's like, you're going to be uncomfortable for the next few hours.
That's true, yeah.
And that it's like this is a movie from the beginning that is not afraid to push its boundaries. When you open with that, you just don't know what's going to happen after that. Because yeah. It's like, normally you get to the point, it's like, are they going to show a naked body or whatever it is? Yeah. But then at this point, it was like, they've done it. And it wasn't a pretty bit, a body. Like, you know, it wasn't supposed to be, you know, it wasn't a glamorized body. But they were, exactly, they were happy.
Yeah.
And they were just completely, like, no fucks were given. Yeah. Kind of a thing. And so, like, when you see that as your first image, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
This is going to be... It's going to be interesting.
It made me wonder what the auditions were like for that part. It's like, how many women did they see?
Yeah.
And just, it's so weird.
Like, hi, my name is something.
They just went to the, you know, the Rust Belt.
Midwest.
Or Maine, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, so that was a really cool explanation. Yeah. They were the opposite of everything she was, and I liked that a lot.
Yeah. I think that movie definitely spoke to me a bit. I've been personally going through some things and, like, debating, like, the love and loss and the pain and the joy. It's, like, two opposite spectrums, and this movie very well, like, summarized, you know, he was so happy with her, and then it was like, this is what it felt like. And it was very, very good. Yeah. Very well done.
I know we're going to get to it the next episode, but speaking of an Oscar snub... for a nomination for her.
Oh, yeah.
Amy Adams.
Wow, I didn't even notice.
For either one.
Either of her movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the film is great because, yeah, like you mentioned earlier, it actually has three different elements that it jumps between her remembering her experiences with her history with Jake Gyllenhaal. Of course, her interpretation of the story as it plays out and her actually reacting to it in present time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, man, I was telling my review that I was so... I never thought I'd like somebody who's just laying in bed reading a novel. It was one of the most powerful... Like, when they cut back to her and her... Like, just her emotion. It's like being sucked right out of her and she's just helpless. And, of course, at that point, earlier on, you don't know what exactly happened. So when the whole abortion thing comes up, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she calls her daughter. I talked to you about it because I forgot that her and Armie Hammer have been together for a while.
Yeah.
So it was her daughter with him.
Yeah.
For a second, I was like, wait, she actually has a daughter with Jake Gyllenhaal. They never really mentioned it. So there's a lot of...
Yeah. I mean, before that happened, I was thinking, like, okay, this is a little bit extreme because we saw the phone call before we heard about the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is a little bit extreme if Jake Gyllenhaal's, like, in his book, killing the wife and the daughter. And he's like, this is what it felt like. But it's like, but shouldn't you be happy your wife and daughter are alive? And it was like, nope, his daughter's not alive. And I was like, this makes sense now. This is fine.
Also, when I first, like, when they first go into this, the novel bit, totally did not realize that it was not Amy Adams for, like, the first 10 minutes of that.
Oh, wow. Isla Fisher.
Like, for a second, and I was like, wait, she doesn't look like, something's off here. And then at the end of the movie, when it said Isla Fisher, I'm like, oh my God, that's who it was. Yeah.
It's funny, I've heard people, like, say that. I'm trying to find pictures for the review I posted. There was a whole bunch of people saying, oh yeah, they're so similar. I'm like, I don't see it, per se, like... If you stand side by side, Isla's definitely shorter, and she has more of a prominent red. I don't know, but it was at nighttime.
Yeah, it was at nighttime, so it was, like, you know, not really well lit.
Yeah.
So all you see is some red and very, very similar facial features, mm-hmm. and they had a very similar vocal quality.
They do.
So and it wasn't her?
It was Isla Fisher in the story, right?
That's what we're talking about. Sacha Baron Cohen's wife, Isla Fisher. Yeah, she was...
They're married?
Yeah.
Did not know
they have, like, three... She has three kids, and she looks like that.
Oh, my gosh. But, that was her. That was Isla Fisher in the story sequences. So Amy Adams was never in the novel sequence.
The adrenaline was just pumping so fast. I was like, I don't even know. I did not want that scene to end. That was so good.
That was a terrifying scene, like, with just a car, like, at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. That was one of those villains where he's so bad, but he's so good. You're like, can you not go away? Because you're just such a good villain.
Like Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds.
Yep. Yeah, like the Jessica Jones villain, like Heath Ledger.
Yeah, David Tennant, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the score. I can't remember much about it now because it's been a couple months since I've seen it, but the score is really good.
The score was awesome. I was surprised that wasn't nominated.
But, I mean, I don't remember anything of the score. I remember appreciating it.
Yeah.
But my theater experience with that was also really weird. They had really weird audio issues, and then there were, like, people snoring and, like, people talking real loud, and then the theater staff coming in with a flashlight and, like, looking through shit, and I was like, what are you guys doing?
It's one of those you want to yell, like, hey, cut the shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's like, oh, is he talking about me?
No shit, Sherlock.
Yes, but I love the movies with the really hardcore, not necessarily message, but a movie like this where it's the metaphor of the pain, it feels so real. I love the double storyline like that. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I'm really fascinated by, and I really want to try to incorporate in my own writing, Tom Ford, so as he was writing the script, it was based on a novel, Karen and something, the names of the characters. Mm-hmm. It's like Karen and Tony, I think it's called, or something like that. As he was writing the screenplay, though, he like collected all of these images. Like, he's a fashion designer, so he's really particular about a certain look. He had like, these folders about each character and like what they represented to him. And then he amassed all these images, all of these styles and this kind of thing, and then gave it to each actor to kind of envelop themselves into that role, which helped him focus on the writing process when he's like, oh, I need to have this person feel this way. So he has like these visual elements that helped him as he's writing and also helped the actors. It was really cool, like behind the scenes look and how he wrote the script. It's like, it's such a cool idea. Yeah. So I'm going to do that one day.
You sure?
Yeah.
Here's a picture of a piece of shit. You're the villain. You have to be, you know, be like this.
And I didn't know that it was the same guy. Like, I thought it was like Tom Ford, the director, Tom Ford, the fashion designer.
No, same guy.
Yeah, but then I saw Aaron Taylor Johnson's Golden Globe thing. He was like, yeah, this is Tom Ford's suit. I was like, oh, okay.
That's nepotism, kind of. You're wearing the suit to my movie premiere. Yeah.
Well, another nominated film that didn't get nominated for too much, except for Best Picture and a couple other things, was Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, okay.
And have you guys seen Hacksaw Ridge yet?
No. It's playing at the $3 theater.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. If you see it on like a Tuesday, it's like $1.50.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous.
That's too much. Go.
I know, it's too much.
No spoilers.
No spoilers for Hacksaw. I liked it at the end. After the movie was finished, I was like, okay, I really enjoyed that. But for the first like half of the movie, I was like, this is kind of ridiculous. And you guys will see, it's just really imbalanced. This isn't spoiling anything. Do you guys know what it's about?
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who never actually attacks or kills anybody. And
yeah, the complete pacifist.
Yeah.
That's the one. So the first half of the movie is before he gets out there. And it deals with his, like, you know, his training and, like, the stuff that he has to deal with in court because he was being a pacifist.
Yeah.
But still not wanting to quit. It took up so much time, and I get it. Like, that's what you want me to feel, that this guy's a good guy and this guy's a pacifist. But I was like, you could have done that. This is a long movie. It's like a 2.5 hour movie. You could have shaved like 15, 20 minutes off of the beginning part. Because you still like the guy's real relationships and the real people that you really start feeling for don't really play a big part in the first half of the movie. And then I wish they would have spent some more time with some of the side characters before they go into war. But I really enjoyed it. I did not like Vince Vaughn, though. People are saying that.
He's in that?
He's in it.
I heard that. He's like a serious role.
Yeah.
No? But
he's supposed to be. I liked him at the end, towards the end of the movie, because I feel like his humor kind of lifted things and it made things a little bit more, like, balanced. Because it's a very violent movie, too. I like that it kind of lightened the ending.
It's kind of ironic.
Yeah, but his beginning and all that stuff, he's trying to be this, like, tough guy. And it just seems so silly. Like, it seems like he's playing this on a school play. Like, it was... I didn't care for it at all. It was just humorous. Like, it didn't seem like... He seemed like he was trying to be the tough guy. And was like, I can play this guy too, guys. Like, yeah. I would like to hear what you guys thought about him, but then I didn't care for him, especially the first half. The second half, I thought he was great. Sam Worthington was good, though.
He's in that?
Yeah, he's in it. There's a lot of people in this one. I was really surprised. Like, every new face, I was like, oh my god, it's you. But Sam Worthington's in it, and he was really good.
That's interesting.
Mel Gibson in it himself?
No. I don't think so.
He has this crazy, like, really bad beard now, so you'd be able to pick him out of a crowd.
Okay. Oh, I don't think I saw him.
I think he's trying to avoid getting seen right now. Still trying to work his way out of of the shit.
But it was, like, in terms of, as far as war movie goes, like, I haven't seen a war movie like this in a while. So I was, it's brutal. Like, a lot of the war sequences, they're brutal. And it's like, oof, really did give the right impact for what the message was supposed to be about.
I'm very interested to see it because I've never seen a movie directed by Mel Gibson before. So.
Oh, wow.
Because of his bullshit, he said?
I don't think so. I think because most of them are long. And obviously, I don't know. That didn't help. I wasn't, like, running to see Mel Gibson movie. But
yeah, they're all very long. Yeah.
I think I've only seen one. So he's done Braveheart,
Apocalypto,
Passion of the Christ. That's the only one I've seen.
I've only seen Signs with him as an actor.
Really?
Wow. You missed a lot of movies then.
Yeah.
Damn. I know he starred in a couple, like
Father and... The Passion of the Christ Resurrection?
Yeah.
No. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, yeah. You didn't know about this?
No. What the fuck?
It's money.
I avoided Passion of the Christ for obvious reasons, but I'm like, really, dude? You're doing the second one?
Oh my God. This actually kind of makes me really angry. But he has two other ones in production called Berserker, and Barbary Coast is in development.
Aside from the long intro, does Hacksaw Ridge kind of hit the tropes of a cliche biopic? Wartime biopic?
Yeah.
Do they end it with, now this guy's doing this? And
well, of course, they have actual footage of some of the people interviewing now.
So there were a lot of nominations for this film.
Not a lot.
Well, a couple.
But let's see.
You got director.
What is the reason that this film's standing out?
People said they were surprised that he was nominated for director.
What element of the film makes it stand out? Like, what about it is giving it such critical praise?
I think it really was the war element, because with the sound mixing and like all the audio in it, and the way that those scenes were edited together were really good. Like, those war sequences were fantastic. They were brutal, but they were brilliantly done.
It sounds like the performances as well.
The performances were great. I don't know why I didn't quite like Andrew Garfield's performance as much as everyone else did. It was fine, but I feel like, I don't know if it was the writing or what it was, but then I didn't quite believe him as this necessarily. He did a fine job with it. I'm more excited to see him in The Silence, because I feel like he would have done a better job in that than in this one. But they're very similar tones.
I think Adam Driver looks awesome in that.
Yeah, but... and I don't care for Adam Driver, and I'm so excited to see him in this movie.
You should see Patterson.
It's good.
Patterson's awesome.
Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, definitely the sound mixing and the sound editing film, and like those three, I think is going to be great. And I mean, because, you know, the Best Picture Award's always for the producers, like the way it was produced and like the scale of the production is incredible. So,
well, that makes sense, I guess.
I haven't seen it yet, but I think the story is a war story that really hasn't been told before with the
non-violence. Yeah.
So I think that's also probably why it's getting so much attention.
It is. It has a very, very on-the-nose message, though, which is why I was kind of like, it works, but I was a little like, okay, we get it. Yeah. We get it.
It's a good thematic element to have such a, like, an opposing force or an opposing viewpoint in the military. Like, that was, I'm surprised that hadn't been made years ago.
Yeah.
If it was based on a true story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how these things get pushed around in Hollywood. It doesn't make sense to me.
Like, I know some of the companies I've interned for have some big scripts that they're just
writing. I don't know why they
did. The story of the Black Swan script, he had the script. It wasn't the ballet. It was, like, just the other part, the going dark and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He had that on paper, and then my old boss, Mike Medavoy from Phoenix Pictures, had it in his desk for years. And then he was talking to Darren Aronofsky, maybe about doing it. And Darren Aronofsky went to see Swan Lake and came back to Mike Medavoy, and he was like, this is how we do it. And so it took years to get that made.
Wow.
Well, yeah, speaking of violence, yeah. The communal film is, I'd say, one of the last performances from Anton Yelchin, but he's done a lot. He has two more coming out still.
Yeah, Anton.
I know, Anton Yelchin.
He also did Troll Hunters. He was the voice of the Troll Hunters, the Netflix Guillermo del Toro
thing. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's right.
They have a little thing. They're like, our Troll Hunter, Anton Yelchin. I was like, no. Anyway, sorry.
The film I'm referring to is the 2015 release Green Room, starring Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, which I've always had a thing for.
Was it 2015?
I think it's 2016. Yeah. It was Sundance last year.
No, it was 2015 release. I almost watched it for last year, but I never got a chance to.
Because those, like...
That's so weird. Yeah, anytime it's a festival...
It might be like they finished it in 2015 and probably had, like, a couple screenings somewhere in 2015. Counts, I think Sundance is when it was, like, it's bigger.
Which is January.
January of 2016.
Okay. Stars, of course, Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots.
Patrick Stewart.
Oh, well, I was going to say Patrick Stewart for the end, but...
Sorry, we just wanted to jump the gun.
What the hell is her name?
You guys heard he's playing the poop emoji?
The what?
In the emoji movie?
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart's playing the poop emoji. His voice.
There's an emoji movie coming out?
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
Green Room is a very violent film. I did not expect it to be this violent. I actually got like a guttural response to one of the scenes. Ooh. So again, full spoilers. Yes.
Oh man.
So this band is trying to make it. They're touring like a couple cities. One of the gigs kind of falls through, and they get shafted on their take. And so the guy who was promoting it is like, oh yeah, there's another place you can play, but they're pretty right wing. Just stick to the classic hard stuff, and don't play anything new or anything like that. And so they go to this massive warehouse, and like there's a whole bunch of just like skinheads,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh shit, This is like, they don't ever say Nazi, but they
do actually. Oh, they do? Songs.
Well, the Nazi. Well, I was getting Neo-Nazi. But they don't say it in there. Like they recognize that they're definitely Nazi-like, and so they play the fuck, was it fuck you Nazis or Nazi fuck Nazi scum or some shit.
Something like that. Yeah. It was like it's a fuck cover.
Yeah. It's a cover, but they play like this really aggressive song towards the Nazis, and you can start seeing people get all pissed off and stuff, and then they start playing their other stuff, and they. Okay, yeah, they get into it eventually. But as they're leaving, Anton grabs his friend's phone.
He goes back.
He goes back to get the phone. Yeah, there's another
in the green room.
In the green room. There's another. I didn't know that was the reason why it was named like that.
No, I didn't
either. Even after I knew it was about a band.
Oh yeah.
For some reason, I was like, "There's some other like level to this," and it was pretty much just the green room.
Yeah, just what happens in the green room.
But so he goes back to get a phone, and the other band has killed another girl.
It's not the other band, right? Well, that was the people who work there.
Yeah, I thought it was the security guard or something.
Yeah, he was.
You're right, because they send him home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the band's in there too, though. Yeah. There's another band in
there. There was some other people,
But, so they get holed up in the green room, and Patrick Stewart has to come deal with it because he owns this establishment, which is all, like, essentially not a neo-Nazi camp. And they have to try to clean this shit up and get these kids out of here, and they're trying to get them off the property to stage their death, like, down the road. Like, they had an accident or something. Every time they come to the door, like, there's, like, this conversation, and they don't want to give up the gun they have. They have a hostage, one of the guys who was a part of the skinhead group. And yeah, shit goes down. They eventually get these red laces, these Nazis that are like superb. They're really good at what they do. They have red boot laces. And they, in the scene I was referring to, he agrees to give up the gun because Patrick Stewart is trying to like sweet talk them out of, you know, there's no guns here, nothing like that. And he puts the gun out. Like one of the girls, Imogen Poots, sees the red laces in the grate under the door. And she's like, no, they're trying to kill us. They're trying to kill us. And by that point, they already have machetes slicing away at this guy's arm. Oh, fuck. And he pulls his arm back. It looks so gross.
Yeah.
It looks real.
The wrist is like...
Yeah, the wrist is blimp, and it just chopped the shit out of his arm. And it was I love practical effects, but man, they can get you really, like sick.
Yeah.
CGI can never do that. We'll always know CGI, but that was just disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it.
Yes, oh my gosh. I would agree.
The thing is, I was aware of that scene. I didn't know what happens, but people were... So that was one of the screenings. I didn't get to watch it at Sundance, but then I was manning the door.
Mm-hmm.
So all I heard was... And then people are like, oh my God. And then they come out and they're like, oh my God, the thing that happened with his arm. And I was like, uh-oh, what happens? And so I knew something bad happened to his arms as soon as he went out with his arm. I was like, uh-oh.
Here it is.
Here it comes.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
I got warned from a couple friends who recommended the movie to me. And so I should have warned you guys that it's pretty...
No, I knew it was violent. Pretty
out there.
Yeah. I didn't like the movie that much until the second half of the movie.
Yeah.
Because I felt like it was going in like and then they're all just gonna die kind of a way. Like, immediately when they were all trying to escape that time. All spoilers, right?
Spoiler. Oh, yeah.
When they're all, like, leaving and the dog comes in. Like, I was like, they're gonna die, blah, blah, blah. And then it just kept going. And then I was like, okay, I can get behind this right now. And what happened in the second half, I really, like, liked that.
Yeah, somebody told me, it was like we were watching a live show. Maybe it was the one you went to, maybe not. But somebody, one of the guests that Doug Loves Movies, had spoiled it for me, saying, oh, yeah, everybody died. So I went in thinking everybody died. And not the case.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's two people left. Anton and
that's right.
The girl.
They're just chatting.
Well, no, not the friend. The girl that was there with her Daisy friend who died. Yeah. Her name
is. No, but then there was the Nazi who like turned good at the end.
Oh yeah, he goes calls the cop and he turned himself in.
Yeah.
I thought when I watched it about 2 months ago, I saw it was on Amazon and I was like, no way, this is one of the ones on my list for horrors of the year. I was expecting much more of a horror, not a thriller. It had the violence of a horror, but it wasn't like...
It wasn't a horror film,
But it was so really, really good. But I think I had a different expectation of what I was going
to
see.
I feel like it pretty much was what I expected it to be, so I was really pleased with it. I saw it this morning.
Wow.
Yeah, that's something to wake up to.
I was just going to say,
I seriously woke up and I was like, oh, I need to watch that. Okay, let's watch this. It's 8:30. So it was 8:30 this morning.
You're like, oh my God, the arm. They weren't kidding.
I know. Oh man, it was... the coloring in that movie was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, ugh.
I remember a lot of green.
Yeah, I mean...
They didn't white balance for shit.
Yeah.
No, but like the fluorescence could have looked so ugly, but that green looked so good.
Yeah, it did.
And I'm like, that's hard to get green lights like that to not look like it's white balance.
Yeah. I also really like those movies where it's like, what would you do? Okay, I'd be gone right there.
And I feel like they kind of did a good job with things that you would really do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when the dog comes up and gets
names.
The guy that gets mauled by the dog. The other guy that, like, breaks the guy's arm. He, like, runs into the kitchen and, like, jumps out the window. And I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, I would do that. And he just gets killed. And I was like, oh, shit.
I thought the negotiating for the gun and all that stuff in between with the door closed and all that was very realistic.
Oh, when she slices his stomach open, too?
Ugh, yeah. I know. God. Ugh, I was like.
So technically, he didn't die.
Who?
It looks like she just cut through the fat.
The guard?
The big guy, yeah.
But that's.
I thought he was way dead.
He was. He strangled him to death.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they were like, how do you know when he's gone? And she's like,
well. Yeah, well, they were like, for some reason, I thought, like, yeah, I thought that was, like, the final blow.
He looked like a teddy bear, too. He just looked like he would be such a sweet guy.
Sure. Probably.
And, yeah. And I was like, God damn it. Plausible. That's what scared me about this movie.
I'm sure there's some place like this around here that in the country that has like very similar shows and shit could go down. We don't know.
So those are three very violent movies.
Three very violent movies, yeah.
So something that's not violent and is very. Actually, no, it is pretty violent. It's just family friendly violence. It's my fourth 52 pickup film, the 1998 release, Small Soldiers.
Nice. Oh my God, Small Soldiers.
Yep.
That fucking movie. Creep me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Those tiny things. Woo!
So, the cool thing was directed by Joe Dante, who did Gremlins. So it's really cool that he did another film that was very similar in, like, these little creatures attack humans. Sadly, Phil Hartman's last movie, his psychotic fucking wife. Oh, I'll never forgive her for that. She killed him in his sleep.
Oh my gosh.
Shotgun. She thought he was cheating on him. And then she called her friends all sad and, like, freaked out, and then she killed herself.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, what a crazy lady. I don't like her. Every time I think of Phil Hartman, I have to think about that now. So anyway, yeah, it was a really cool, interesting like take on this kind of film. And it was written really dark. And then the studio kind of was like, we gotta make sure it's family friendly, but it was a little too late. And so it kept a lot of elements of both. Very cool voice cast, by the way. So the two leads, the Commando Elite, Tommy Lee Jones is Chip Hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Archer, the lead of the Gorgonites, is Frank Langella. And what's funny is that, so the Commando Elite is almost all, except for Tommy Lee Jones, actors from the 1967 film The Dirty Dozen. So Jim Brown, Ernest Borgnine, Bruce Dern replaced somebody who died right before the recording, so they couldn't do it. Wow. So it was a really interesting like nod, because Joe Dante is a big fan, I guess, of that.
Wow.
And for the Gorgonites, it is the cast of Spinal Tap. Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, and Michael McKean do all the voices for the an uncredited Jim Cummings, who's a voice actor. He's really good. But yeah, Spinal Tap.
In Gremlins?
No. It's all Spinal Tap? No, in Small Soldiers.
I didn't even realize that.
So they did all the voices for Frankenstein. I can't remember all their names. There's some really weird names. Scratch It, Punch It. Some really fucked up names. But anyway. Crazy. Yeah, so two of the characters, two of the little creatures are Christopher Guest, two are Michael McKean, and one is Harry Shearer.
Oh, man.
It's weird.
One of the only scenes I really remember from that movie, like, vividly, is the tennis balls on fire, and she's like,
yeah. Yep.
It was funny.
I watched that a couple years ago. It was almost like for the first time. Like, I'd seen it as a kid, but I didn't really remember much. So I watched it again, and, like, it is surprisingly dark for a kid's movie. Like,
it pretty much holds up. I mean, yeah so, like, I say this all the time in my blog. I made fun of it in this post, actually. CGI is always, like, outdated.
Oh, yeah.
They use a little bit. But with the quality of the screenplay, I mean, like, it's really funny. It's, again, very dark, so it's cool to see that as a kid anyway. And really good cast. Like, he uses standards like Dick Miller and Robert Picardo. If you don't know them, like, he's a regular. They're regulars with him. Dick Miller is amazing. If you ever want to know more about Dick Miller, watch the documentary called That Guy Dick Miller. He's like, he was in Terminator. He's in the Gremlins films as like Murray Futterman, the neighbor who was always drunk.
Yeah.
What was he in Terminator?
He sold Schwarzenegger the gun in the gun shop. So he's in a lot of stuff. You've seen him everywhere. But they also have like Jay Moore, David Cross, and Dennis Leary like as the executives and the development people behind.
That's right.
The toys. Yeah. So wow. It's like this really weird, like interesting, eclectic cast.
Yeah.
And like Kevin Dunn, you may not know, but he was the father. He also played the father in the first three Transformers films. So now you know who I'm talking about. But he graduated from the role of father in Small Soldiers to father in
Transformers.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool film. Hopefully it was on Netflix as of now, so yeah. I didn't have to spend money. It? Yeah.
I should watch it.
Yeah. Kirsten Dunst is in there, like in her third.
That was Kirsten Dunst.
Right, yes, the daughter.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Back before I knew who she was.
This movie started.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah, because she was in Interview with the Vampire and then Jumanji and then this pretty much. Yeah, there's probably something between that.
Bring It On.
Bring It On was 2000, after, right after. And then Virgin Suicides was her?
Was that her?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
The Holocaust movie.
She was in a Holocaust movie?
Yeah, it was like about this girl, she's trashing her grandma. She doesn't want to listen to her at a dinner. And then like this lightning storm happens and she's like transported back in time to like the Holocaust.
Wow, that's an interesting concept. Yeah,
it's really, really cool.
And is it played for like drama or is it called? Yeah. Okay.
And then she comes back and she like appreciates what her grandma went
through.
That's
nice.
Yeah.
That sounds so vaguely familiar.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up.
It's not like we have the internet at our fingertips.
We don't.
Oh, The Devil's Arithmetic. That's what it's called.
Oh, really? But yeah, that's all of this episode, I think.
Yeah.
Cashed out. Kicked. What other marijuana references can we do? No. So, yes. Follow us on Facebook at Not Quite Hollywood. Follow us on Facebook. Just search Not Quite Hollywood. I can't remember the URL. On Twitter, we are NQHpod. I have a blog where I post this, guyonawire.com, about movies and shit. And Tim?
And I have an Instagram account, so follow me on Tim Jim Lim Artist. I just post shit about being a filmmaker in Hollywood.
That's fun.
Plug, plug, plug. My Instagram is at me and my blazer, and my blog is Doggone Movie Reviews that I really need to update. I will
update it. You say that every episode.
I will. I'm going to put up my top 10 this week because I'm almost done with all of them.
Nice. Cool.
I need to talk to you guys about movie reviews because I have never felt comfortable putting movie reviews online for some reason.
I hear you. I feel like I'm not like a prominent voice at all. I don't think I need to give my opinion. But
it's really bad. I don't do it if it's a really, really bad movie. If I'm just going to trash it because it's like, what if I work for them?
Yeah, I never.
You try not to trash.
Yeah.
What you didn't like about it, but you don't hate it.
Yeah, I feel like bringing it apart, being like, this was terribly done, is different than I hated the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I have said I hated movies on this podcast. Yes, I have. Sure. So
yeah, we all have.
I'm sorry to whoever listens to this and wants to hire me later. Love
Tim
you.
Jim Lim. I am deaf. No.
I am mute.
I am Jamie.
I am Tim.
I'm Alex.
And have a good night.
Bye.